Just imagine, the mightiest heroes of our time.
All of them, on one team.
The Fire and Water Network proudly presents...
JLU Cast.
Welcome to JLU Cast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, Cindy Franklin.
And I'm Chris Franklin, and we're back for one last time. We apologize for the delay, but we have finally returned to wrap up JLU Cast with our superlatives and rankings for Season 3 of JLU, as well as the entire series runs of Justice League and Justice League Unlimited.
We will also read some comments from the feedback you left us on the second half of Season 3.
We initially hoped to produce two more episodes, this one and one featuring an interview with a special guest who worked on both series. Unfortunately, that interview fell through, but it's really only fitting that Cindy and I wrap this one up ourselves.
Correct.
So we'll just have to do. And in some ways, like I said, it's better this way because this has always been our show and our take on Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. So it seems fitting that it's just you and I to wrap things up.
Yeah.
So again, apologies, life happens, and,
You just get us.
And I apologize that it took so long to get to this, because it's kind of, I know it's a little anticlimactic to wait 4 months and,
well,
6 months, I guess, because of House of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
So it's like, 6 months later, you get the wrap-up, but, or seven or whatever. So I know, it's kind of, so sorry, but we'll make do. And we'll just move along, and hopefully you're still listening. So, well, let's get the negative things out of the way. So, for Season 3, we're going to start, just focus on Season 3 in the first half of this episode. For Season 3, what was your least favorite episode?
Chaos at the Earth's Core.
So, the Warlord episode.
Yes.
That was mine as well. I mean, it's not a bad episode, but...
I mean, really, this was a really strong season. But if you had to pick one episode that was kind of not the best, this would be it.
Right. I like that they worked in Warlord and Skartaris, but it was very rushed.
Yeah.
They did a better job dropping in wilder DC concepts elsewhere. I do like the development of Supergirl in that episode and Stargirl being jealous of her, even though it made her look really bad at first.
But this is nothing
against JT the Exterminator, who we had a great time with. Sorry, JT. It has nothing to do with you being the guest.
No, it actually helped me see the episode better.
Right,
because
he's a fan of the 80s movies that this is kind of like. It's got that feel of the Beastmaster and those kind of lower budget action, barbarian type movies that sprung out of the success of Conan.
Mm-hmm.
It's in any other show it'd be like probably a top ranked episode, but for JLU,
Geez, you call that an army?
Most of these folks have lost everything to Deimos, so, feel free to dump on them.
So, now, which one was your favorite episode?
My favorite episode was Ancient History.
Okay.
So, I mean, just the story of John and Shiera and being able to see where they came through time and, how they loved each other and came together back then. But then there's also... Katar Hall and that relationship. And I mean, I just love that episode.
Yeah, that's tailor made for you because you love that stuff.
Yeah.
You love all that reincarnated love
stuff.
And it's a really good episode. I mean, it was a nice twist to have John involved because you didn't expect that.
No,
coming.
Not at all.
You really didn't expect that one. And we had a really nice discussion with Captain Entropy on both parts of the Hawkman storyline. But yeah, that was a really good one. That was.
Katar's my husband.
And my best friend.
I'd leave him for you.
I'd never ask. I'm afraid that you would. Katar needs you.
And I need you.
This one kind of surprised me. My favorite, and I know this is controversial for you because of one aspect of this episode, but Flash and Substance, the Flash Museum episode.
Yeah, yeah.
I surprised myself with this one. I thought for sure I'd go with Destroyer. that is the, you know, series finale.
Right.
But this is one of my favorite of the series. It's one that I, if I'm in the mood to watch a JLU, a lot of times I'll just put this one on.
Yeah.
I love seeing the rogues, Mark Hamill back as the trickster, and Rosenbaum gets another great chance to shine here. He excels as the friendly hometown hero. Batman or Orion being the two he teams up with in this one makes it just so much fun.
Where are the others?
Those crabby hacks can go plug a hole for all I care, but I'm not about to rat them out.
Orion. Talk, while you still have a jaw.
Hey, hey! Would you guys please take it down a notch? Let me handle this. James, you're off your meds, aren't you?
I'm better off without him. Take him if I start feeling down.
You know that's not how the medicine works. You're not well.
I'm fine. You want to throw some darts?
No. Listen, James, you're wearing the suit again.
I am? Well, what do you know?
Here's the deal, buddy. Tell me where those guys went, and I promise to come see you in the hospital. We'll play darts. The soft kind.
Okay. They're going to ambush you at the Flash Museum.
See? That's all we needed. Come on, we better get over there.
What about your enemy?
Oh, right. Dude, as soon as you finish your drink, turn yourself in.
Got me again, Flash.
I know you hate how Linda Park was portrayed.
Oh my gosh.
And I do too, but since we never see her again, I can write it off.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, it was such a great episode, but then their portrayal of Linda Park made it a solid, made it out of the 13 episodes, made it be ranked number 8 for me.
Okay.
Because that's, you know, where it, you know, if you had 13 points, I was just like, I just can't get over how they portrayed her in this.
Yeah.
So.
Well, let's go with, what are your rankings? How do you have them ranked? We know from 13 to the top. We know the bottom and the top, but in between.
Okay. So we have 13 episodes in this season. And of course, we've said number 13 was Chaos at the Earth's Core. 12 is I Am Legion. 11 is Patriot Act. 10 is Dead Reckoning, 9 is Alive, 8 is Flash and Substance, 7 is Shadow of the Hawk, 6 is Destroyer, 5 Far From Home, 4 Grudge Match, 3 The Great Brain Robbery, 2 To Another Shore, and number 1, as I said before, was Ancient History.
Okay, that's interesting. I feel like the Shadow of the Hawk is probably lower on that one because of the whole Stalkman.
Exactly.
The stalker aspect of Hawkman that
yeah.
a lot of our listeners did not care for, which I mean, I understand. Yeah. That's interesting. And of course, I know we'll get to it, but I know why To Another Shore is your number 2.
Uh-huh. Yeah. A little bit.
So my rankings are Chaos at the Earth's Core. That was my least favorite too. Dead Reckoning. Again, this is not... We had guests on almost every episode. This is not anything against any of the guests because Sean
at
Myers
all, no.
was our guest.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, then the next, I had To Another Shore at 11. 10, I had I Am
that's
Legion.
Wrong.
I know, that's a really good episode too. 10, I Am Legion. 9, Grudge Match. 8, Ancient History. 7, Shadow of the Hawk. See, I had it ranked a little bit above that for me.
Well, no, Shadow of the Hawk is 7 in my list, too.
No, but it's above Ancient History for me.
Oh,
and they're
okay.
the two parts, you know,
well, true,
separated
true.
Over several episodes. So, 7, Shadow of the Hawk, as I said, 6, Patriot Act, 5, Far From Home, 4, Alive, 3, The Great Brain Robbery, 2, Destroyer, which was the finale, and then, like I said, number 1, Flash and Substance.
Okay.
Honestly, because it has been, because we have such a gap between when we recorded these, especially the first half
yes,
of the season,
definitely.
It's kind of hard. I probably, if we had done them consecutively and then done our recap or rap party, I probably would have chosen differently, but like being away from it, now I'm kind of like, I'm more distant from it and I can be a little more objective, I think, maybe, or maybe I'm not as informed as I should be. I don't know. But anyway, that's my rankings today, and that's your rankings today. If you poll this like 5 years from now, we'd probably be like, what the hell were we thinking? Why did I put that so high or that so low?
Yeah.
You know, but that's just how things go. But, of course, we have to do our season superlatives.
Okay.
So these are our superlatives. You know, we always do our superlatives every episode, power action feature, rotating chairperson, justly communicator, and the like.
Power action feature.
So who did you have, what did you have for your power action feature for the entire season?
Diana's spin from To Another Shore.
I knew you were going to pick that.
Well, of course. Come on.
You jumped up off the couch and went, yes, the first time we watched it.
Well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is not a surprise to anybody. My power action feature was Superman punching Darkseid across Metropolis from Destroyer. So.
Right. True.
That's an all-timer there, maybe. We'll see.
Rotating chairperson.
So who did you have for permanent chairperson?
Well, honestly, it was one of those cases that I think, to me, Supergirl was the chairperson of the episode because you see her evolution from the whole series and how it ends when she is in the episode where she stays in the future with Brainiac. It's the her whole character arc, her evolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. That's a good pick. Yeah, I mean, honestly, from Superman the Animated Series.
Yeah, exactly.
Through here, yeah.
Kara, I don't even know you, but history says you never returned from this battle.
What?
And you knew that all along?
I'm sorry. I had hoped it wouldn't come to this. I wanted to spare her.
There's still a planet full of people down there who need our help. Do your job, and I'm going to do mine.
But...
in case I don't see you again.
I picked her, but I also gave it to Wonder Woman and Shiera. They have to split it because they all got two votes from me apiece. So in the past, you know, I actually calculated who got what.
Yeah, I didn't look at that part.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and I feel like it was a strong season for the female heroes.
It was. It was.
You know, and really, in a lot of ways, Supergirl became, even though she wasn't one of the original seven, I think she, along with Green Arrow, became kind of one of the main leads,
yes,
you know, on the show.
Definitely.
So, I must say it's a three-way tie there.
Okay.
Justice League Communicator.
So, Justice League Communicator, what was your favorite exchange or line?
Well, and this is, honestly, it's because of the way you say it all the time here at home and stuff. But it's Lex Flippin' Luthor, said by Superman, you know, because he's like, come on, man.
Yeah, from Destroyer.
Yes.
Yeah, that is a good one, yeah. I hope in the Man of Tomorrow movie, where James Gunn has said Superman and Lex are going to have to team up, basically, and it's against Brainiac. We now know it's Brainiac. That I hope that they have Corn Sweat say, come on, it's Lex Flippin' Luthor to Mr.
Yes,
Terrific or
yes.
Lois or somebody, you know. I hope they do that. I don't know if they will.
But it'd be great if they did.
I don't know if that's just a thing between you and me and it's because it's something I picked up, you know, but I hope they do.
She's got a point. We'll need all the bodies we can throw at this. Oh, come on, it's Lex Flippin' Luthor. Why should we trust him?
Hey, it's our world too. Let's be clear about this. We're not here to help you save the world. You're here to help me get revenge on Darkseid. When this is over, it's back to business as usual.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
For me, it's from that same episode, but it's Superman's immortal, I live in a world made of cardboard speech to Darkseid.
Yeah, that's really good, too.
Before he, you know, wallops him.
Yes.
As the
big boy.
The big slow, yeah, version of the Superman theme plays in the background. Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
That man won't quit as long as he can still draw a breath. None of my teammates will. Me? I've got a different problem. I feel like I live in a world made of cardboard, always taking constant care not to break something, to break someone. Never allowing myself to lose control, even for a moment, or someone could die. You can take it, can't you, big man? What we have here is a rare opportunity for me to cut loose and show you just how powerful I really am.
Comic connections.
So for comic connections, what was your favorite comic connection?
It had to be the grouping of the heroes on the last episode when they're running out. I mean, that's just... I'm like, oh, and that's this guy, this group, and that's this group, and you know.
Yeah, yeah. I almost put that one, but I felt like I was going a little Destroyer heavy. So I decided to pick just the Seven Soldiers of Victory being the heroes in Patriot Act.
Okay.
The fact that they went that far. I mean, they also snuck in the Newsboy Legion and Spy Smasher in that episode.
Yeah, true.
And Captain Nazi, more or less. And it's like, wow. And the fact that, you know, you're like, okay, well, they're not going to have Speedy because, he's in Teen Titans. And then Speedy shows up as he appears in Teen Titans. Mind blown,
around
the same time that Michael Rosenbaum voiced Kid Flash on Teen Titans, made every fanboy's head explode with how do these shows connect to each other. Somehow they do. So yeah, I had to pick that one.
Found your reinforcements, GA. I'm teleporting them in now.
Got that. Thanks, T. Well, you wanted Superman, now you got the Crimson Avenger and Mayek's sidekick. Ex-partner. Speedy, we gotta do this now.
Ooh, now I'm scared.
Electricity is evil.
For our infamous Electricity is Evil, what was one of your favorites?
In the Great Brain Robbery, where four people at once get all electrocuted.
Well, that's true. That's a good one. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You know, because you've got four people involved that are just going, wing, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I'm going to go with Tala on the collector in Alive. I don't know if that's really electricity because she's getting all her life force sucked out to bring, Darkseid back.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, her screams are just disturbing.
Yeah.
And apparently they asked her to tone them down and she re-recorded them because they were even more disturbing to begin with.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So, that's something else, yeah. Well, those are our superlatives for Season 3. On these wrap-up shows like this, we like to pick a few special categories, so we'll go over those here. So who do you have for your favorite villain this season?
Tala, darling. Of course.
Yeah, me too, yeah. This is Lex's story arc, but because of that, he's essentially the POV character. This is not a diss on Clancy Brown's wonderful performance, of course. But the writers and Juliet Landau took an obscure "who is that" character in Tala and made her very memorable.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, and after Lex and Grodd, who was also great, voiced by Powers Booth, of course.
Right, right.
You think of her when you think of this storyline.
Definitely.
Was she a doormat? Was she not? Was she, was she manipulating the men? And of course, she was manipulating them.
Right.
But, they were also kind of trampling all over her. It's up for debate how much she let them do that. But I think she could have honestly took them all out if she hadn't. I think she deserved a better end than what she got, but it's very memorable.
Yeah.
Of course, And then, of course, as we will bring up later, she kind of lived on in our House Frankenstein series this year.
A little bit.
Just a little bit, yeah. Yeah. I'll give a runner-up to The Gentleman Ghost, because if I don't, we'll never hear the end of that. Speaking of House Frankenstein. But he didn't get enough screen time to warrant the trophy.
No.
So who'd you have for your favorite non-founding leaguer?
I would have to go with The Question.
Oh, The Question?
Yeah.
He didn't get as much to do this season, but still.
I know, but he was just one of those, he was right. Yeah. The whole thing, he was right.
Well, and the whole 32 flavors thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's a good answer, yeah. Supergirl and Green Arrow have gotten plenty of love, so I would go with Shining Knight.
Okay.
I mean, you can't dig deeper into the bench than Sir Justin here. I mean, that's deep. I mean, he was always just a cool background character until Patriot Act, where his unflappable refusal to give in to both the general and moral decay was very inspiring.
Yes.
And Chris Cox did an outstanding job on the performance in that episode. So, yeah. And then, of course, he had the great back and forth with Vigilante about Clint Eastwood and Dirty Harry and, him not letting him watch his big screen TV anymore.
Yeah.
It's just, he really stood out. And, of course, Nathan Fillion was great as a Vigilante, too. But, that episode ended up being the Shining Knights episode. So, yeah, I'm going to go with that.
I'm sorry. Our dog just came in, so.
Yeah, you guys probably got used to hearing our dogs in the background over the years, and it's just like they have free run of the house, and they pretty much dictate what we do, which is somehow, I don't know how that happens, but it does. So there you go.
Batman Nightcast is back with new episodes every month. This time, we're covering the Dark Knight stories we overlooked in previous iterations of this show.
Anyway, I'm Chris Franklin.
And I'm Ryan Daly.
Join us as we find our joy with Batman Comics chronicling the Caped Crusader's first adventures with the Boy Wonder.
Thrill as we review the fiendish plots of a who's who of villains, like Poison Ivy, Killer Croc, Gentleman Ghost, and Clayface 3.
If this is a bit, I don't understand it.
Hey kids, comics by legendary creators Don Newton, Neil Adams, Marshall Rogers, and Bill Sienkiewicz.
Plus, the single greatest Batman story ever told.
It all comes back to Batman Nightcast.
I don't know what's happening right now.
New episodes every month.
Batman Nightcast, part of the Fire & Water Podcast Network.
Wanna make something of it?
Did you fall on your head? Now that we've gone over our superlatives, we are going to jump into listener feedback for the episodes in the second half of Season 3. We're going to do our series-wide ones toward the end and wrap things up. But we thought we'd do some feedback. Now, this isn't every single bit of feedback we got. I cherry-picked from what was written. That way, you know, we kind of got a broad spectrum. I think everybody that commented at least is, you know, gets mentioned or we get read a part of their comment. So, you know, at per usual with Fire and Water feedback.
So from Patriot Act, that was with Ranger Gord Tolton, Noah Tarnell writes in, I think that this is a nearly perfect episode of JLU. It does a great job exemplifying what makes this series so great. Number one, sensational superhero fight scenes. Number two, real moral stakes handled intelligently. Number three, actually funny humor. And number four, a spotlight on deep cut DC characters. I'm surprised you didn't call out what is far and away my favorite line of dialogue in the episode. Midway into kicking his butt, the general says to the Shining Knight, why don't you give up? Sir Justin, barely able to stand, declares, why don't you? Gives me chills every time.
Yeah, we mentioned, I don't think we mentioned that line, but I remember we mentioned that it's the same thing as like Cap in Endgame when he, you know, with his arm torn up, and his shield shattered, he still, you know, straps the shield to his broken arm and is ready to take on Thanos. By himself because he's the last man standing, you know. It's that same thing. But yeah, we probably should have pointed it out. Tim Price writes in, did you watch Amazon's The Tick series? They had an homage to the Seven Soldiers of Victory called The Flag Five. I think it was solely via dialogue, but two members of the Flaggers appeared in the episode. The talking dog Midnight and now adult sidekick Straight Shooter. But the other four members of the FF had been killed long ago, and these two would argue which one of them was the real fifth member. Midnight would say, five heroes plus a sidekick, Shooter. Five heroes plus a mascot. Then the shouting begins, sidekick, mascot. It was hilarious. I haven't seen that version of the Tick, but now I want to. So that's funny. Yeah, that's funny. Tim continues, but now I can't help but see Wing, Speedy, and Stripesy having the same argument over which of them are part of the Seven and which was the plus one. I know it's canon to say Wing was the extra sauce, but really, doesn't it sound like something Speedy and Stripesy would do? I'm sorry, Wing with extra sauce? That's funny.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and it makes me think of any time that, like, the Earth 2 Golden Age Speedy liked to argue, because I always think back to one of my favorite comics of all time, All-Star Comic, number 31, where Robin basically tells Speedy, Green Arrow's nothing but Batman with a bow, and Speedy's like, you take that back, and they're arguing back and forth about it, so, of course, I guess Robin started that fight, but he's not wrong, so.
All right, Doug Adamson writes in, I always consider the Seven Soldiers of Victory to be the ultimate forgotten hero team, well, except for the forgotten heroes in the DCU. They are almost always as old as the JSA, and sure enough, they did pop up in later years. But I always associate their members with other teams or years. Green Arrow and Speedy, JLA and the Titans, Shining Knight in my mind was always in the All-Star Squadron. Vigilante, well, there's loads of different folks with that name which can confuse. Crimson Avenger predates Batman and always reminded me of the Shadow. Star-Spangled Kid and Stripesy, again, JSA. Yet it's clear that the JLU team loved this team and diving into DC history, and it was wonderful to see each of them have a moment, mostly. The Newsboy Legion, even, if not by name, was another fantastic Easter egg.
Yeah, the Seven Soldiers is kind of like that lost team. And I so wish, I felt like Stargirl was going in that direction where they were going to reunite
right.
everybody, and they didn't get to do it. And it's a shame that they didn't, you know, I think if it had lasted a couple more seasons, they probably would have devoted a season to that. Mm-hmm. But it had been really cool if they had Nathan Fillion play the vigilante since he voiced him on here.
Yeah.
You know, of course, now he's got Gardner, but you know, but anyway. Hal writes in, if I didn't already love this show, I swear the enthusiasm of you and your guest would tempt me to watch it. Ranger Gord was a great guest, but I'm not sure. Did I miss it? Vigilante's sometimes partner Billy Pop Gunn appeared in early issues of Leading Comics, actually making 9 Seven Soldiers. I don't remember him mentioning him, but then he did mention him in the promo. Yeah, you can count him, you can count, you know, Wing, and then they retconned characters in to replace Green Arrow and Speedy over the years until they made them Seven Soldiers again through via time travel. Hal continues, I'm not sure I would have connected the kids with the Newsboy Legion. Good call. They were part of the Lost Children and John's Stargirl mini, including Flippa Dippa and Kirby's other Newsboy creation, Roberta Famous Bobby Harper, the great niece of Jim Harper, now apparently retconned to the 40s along with a teenage Wing. I can't keep up these days.
No.
I just can't. So, yeah.
This is from Ange. As you say, Chris, this was an Easter egg hunt for comic fans. I think The General is such a deep cut for Morrison's JLA. It's my favorite one from this episode, but I remember watching this with my kids when they were kids and stopping to say, this is the Seven Soldiers of Victory.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, you know, I did that the same thing with Andrew, even though, you know, I had to tell him, well, you know, Green Arrow and Speedy were here, and then I had to go dig out a comic with him in it, or probably the Crisis on Multiple Earths, where they go in the trade paperback, where they reprint the JLA story, where the JLA and JSA, like, pull the Seven Soldiers from their different time periods that they got thrown into. So, yeah. Our favorite nephew, Osamu Hideki Yukinori, writes in, I recall my dad telling me about fan speculation on the Toon Zone boards for this episode. The advanced press releases revealed 6 of the 7 heroes, all but Speedy, that were going to appear, and making the connection to the Seven Soldier victory, the fans on TZ were making guesses on who the 7th soldier from the JLU roster was going to be, thinking that it couldn't possibly be Speedy, because he was on the original Teen Titans cartoon at the time, and it was presumed there was an embargo to having him appear on JLU. I bet they were all surprised. Yes, just like me. Say, did anyone notice that when the Shining Knight leaped down to slash the General to prevent him from crushing Stargirl's head, time index 1635 on the Blu-ray, Stargirl suddenly disappeared? Well, there was a cut sequence from this scene of the General throwing the unconscious Stargirl at Sir Justin as he dove down with the sword, and the winged Victory swooping down to catch her. You can watch this sequence during the end credits of Dead Reckoning. Wow, of course, Isamu catches something like that.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's awesome. No, I didn't notice that. I did not notice that, and we appreciate it, as always, that you are your father's son, as we have said many times, and you come with the minutia that boggles the mind. So thank you once again.
All right. Now we're moving on to another episode, The Great Brain Robbery, that we recorded with Billy D. Rob McCarthy writes in, number one, I guess if Lex Luthor doesn't know Wally West, Crisis never happened, or Flash history is totally different. Number one and a half, I always assumed that there was a Barry Allen who had been the Flash. That's why Batman knew Wally. Number two, if you're sleeping your way to the top of the Legion, you gotta be pretty happy when Luthor takes over from the guy who gave you fleas.
What would Talos say about that?
I know.
No, you're supposed to be doing the voice. Ward Hill Terry writes in, comic connection. In Flash number 266, October 1978, Heatwave knocks out the Flash and says, now to remove Flash's cowl and reveal his true identity. I know I've seen that face somewhere before. I just can't place where. Ironic, I finally pull off the criminal coup of the decade, the unmasking of the Flash, and I still don't know who he is. Then he plays Flash in a cryogenic chamber. To be continued. I was intrigued by the actors imitating the other characters. This is how a Dead Man TV show should, but never will be. The actor playing Boston Dead Man Bran only appears as a ghost. When he takes over someone else's body, the actor who is in that body will then imitate the actor of Boston Bran. For instance, if Christopher Walken was cast as Boston Bran, when Dead Man possessed Peter Dinklage or Meryl Streep, then Dinklage or Streep would imitate Walken while they were possessed.
Oh my.
So kind of like when people get possessed on Ghosts.
Yeah.
Like, in the lead on Ghost is really good at imitating the different characters when she gets... I'm horrible at thinking of people's names off the top of my head. But she's really good at imitating, like, Flower.
Yes.
And when she's been possessed by the different characters and acting like them, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Nancy, the basement ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's really good at that, yeah.
Usamu writes in, "It is nice to see a mind-switching story on a cartoon that doesn't have the old trope of the characters also switching voices. Even a possessed Talia from Batman Beyond episode Out of the Past talked with Ra's al Ghul's voice." So, wait. Ice was taken down by Bad Flash in the Watchtower, which was locked down to prevent Bad Flash from escaping. And yet she was also part of the Metro Tower team that helped foil the train robbery? Speaking of Ice, she was really badass in how she stopped Dr. Polaris from stealing a few of the Euro crates. I suppose those metal nails were hammered into those wooden crates nice and tight, as well as being the only Metro Tower leaguer to evade Polaris' attacks.
Yeah, we talked about that in the feedback. That's a Super Friends level goof of Ice being in the, you know,
two different
places. She shouldn't have been there. That literally was watching the Challenge of the Super Friends airs on MeTV Toons
yeah.
in the afternoons, and there was an episode on the other day, and it was the one where the Super Friends are sent back in time, and Batman and Robin are sent to ancient Rome, or is it ancient Greece? I can't remember, but it's they're sent back into the past, and they're not supposed to be in the present when they go to try to figure out where the Super Friends are, and they visit this scientific institute, and while they're all standing around listening to this professor tell them what's going on, Batman's standing there. So, and they do things like that when Batman, I think, was dead in that episode. He was standing there. So, yeah, they're really bad about that. So, Noah Tarnow writes in again, "Great episode. The weirdest thing about the Hall of Doom restroom for me is imagining the process of cleaning it. What kind of person works as a janitor for a supervillain headquarters? Does the Legion of Doom have an HR rep tasked with hiring them? How does the building get its new supplies of soap and TP? It's almost enough to take me out of the story. I recall watching this episode when it debuted with a group of friends, most of whom weren't comic geeks, so I imagine it was the first time any of them had heard of Dr. Fate, Mr. Terrific, etc. It's really a perfect episode for the layman, since it's so damn funny. I remember the two lines that really killed with that crowd were, I have no idea who this is, and no, because I'm evil. This is a fun one. And yeah, that started a whole thing we discussed about the Legion of Doom's hiring practices.
Yeah.
Like, who is their, you know, HR department? You know, who do they get it through a staffing service? I mean, and how long do they last? You know, I mean, we had those same questions about the Justice League. You know, they go drive people out to cornfields and they get beamed up into space.
Yeah.
Does the same thing happen with the Legion of Doom, so they don't know what swamp the Hall of Doom's in?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Siskoid writes in, "There are probably hench ranks. They don't bring you in on a daring bank robbery first outing. You're on hyena duty for a while."
Yeah, there you go. You got to feed Bud and Lou, you know. Or as in the movie, Brucey, because she named him after Bruce Wayne, right?
Yeah.
Brett Young writes in, "I learned two things from this episode. One, Flash is a generous lover."
Oh, that's why you like him.
Yeah. Two, "I would love a workplace comedy starring the Legion of Doom. We can get that in small parts through the Harley Quinn and Kite Man shows, but I want it to have its own live-action thing similar to The Office." Yeah, that would be fun. I could see James Gunn doing that, too. So.
Tim Price writes in, "For such a brief appearance, I love Dr. Light in this episode. Lauren Tom nails the character, and the design looks great, and her powers are very effective. It left me wanting more. Wouldn't it have been fun to have a story with her versus the villainous Dr. Light? Has he appeared in any Legion of Doom group shots?"
Not that I know of. Dr. Light was on the Teen Titans animated series, though. So there you go.
About Green Lantern's weakness to yellow, there was the funny bit when Flash was mind-controlled by Grodd, threw a banana at Green Lantern, and John didn't try and stop it with his ring, unlike everything else that Flash threw. Now, this is the second time something yellow and thrown at Flash speeds has struck John. That's a fun coincidence.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't really know. They never, to my knowledge, ever really come out and said, does yellow have anything effect on Green Lantern's constructs in here, but yeah, apparently, maybe it kind of does. So, Chris Ferroni writes in, this episode of JLU is one of my favorites for how fun it is, and your coverage has made it even more fun. I listened to it while at the gym this morning, and you had me laughing so much I didn't get much benefit from my workout. I almost lost it at Cindy's takes role playing to a whole new level comment. I really enjoyed how well Clancy Brown and Michael Rosenbaum switched personalities for their lines. There were a couple of times that I questioned whether it was really Clancy Brown or Michael Rosenbaum delivering the lines. Also loved all the insults and one-liners throughout the episode. Dwayne McDuffie was a true genius and was taken from this world far too early. May he rest in peace. Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely so. Yeah, I'm sorry about the workout, though. That's too bad.
Ange writes in, too many funny lines. I think, because I'm evil, in the restroom is my ultimate fave. But that's not restful. And the Charlton Heston lines are both big wins. I always thought that Tala wasn't a doormat or silly. I think she was shrewd, using her sexuality to basically be the queen and run the show. My guess is she is working her, magic to influence decisions made by both Grodd and Lex. For sure, if Polaris became the boss, she would be his girlfriend.
So what do you think about that?
I think that's just one of those cases. I don't know why she doesn't just seize power herself. I mean, she's...
Yeah, I mean, you know. Yeah, that's the question. I mean, she shows that how powerful she is. Why, there must be something in her past that makes her feel like, even if she is manipulating them somewhat, she can't be completely out. She has to be somewhat subservient.
Yeah.
To a man in power, which is like, you know, but she's also a villainess, so she's messed up in the head, you know. So,
yeah, true.
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. He brings up good points, though. So our next episode was Grudge Match with Noah Tarnow. Isamu writes in again, Beto Willalden, I may have butchered that, is Sonar's real name. Besides being a brilliant sound engineer and inventor, he is also the sovereign leader of Madora, a tiny European country nestled in the Balkans. How tiny? Well, Green Lantern Hal Jordan once said that Madora is only a block long, but he may have been exaggerating. I did make the Watch JLU for the plot meme comment mostly to get a laugh, and it did. But I do appreciate you all addressing the elephant in the room regarding the fan service of female fighting matches. Anime versions can get very gratuitous, and I agree that this JLU episode handled it in a very not-so-salacious manner. Yeah, I think for the most part, it, you know, I mean, obviously, yeah, there's some shots here and there that are, you know, a little salacious, but, you know, again, Bruce Timm is a horn dog, so.
Oh, my. Hal writes in, how did Roulette manage to promote the fight? In the Teen Titans comic, Dr. Light actually advertised for henchmen in an underworld newspaper. That was the origin of the Fatal Five. Both Marvel and DC had bars where supervillains would hang out. If you want to follow that logic, it wouldn't be unusual to have paid ads promoting Supermatch or whatever they ended up calling it.
That's a good point. Yeah, I remember Dr. Light like putting an ad in the paper to form a supergroup. And then they treated him like crap, which was funny. Siscoid writes in, if I call my cable provider, what package do I ask for to get the Roulette channel? It's probably just a streaming channel now. You know, it's one of those Roku sub channels, probably. Yeah.
Rob Kelly writes in, I know you guys were mostly joking about the Flash and Question spinoff shows, but there really isn't a reason why Max, HBO, not Romero, doesn't have a DC Animation Presents series on right now, with rotating characters in either solo adventures or team-ups. With Gunn and company trying so mightily to rebrand the DCU, this would be a great step in that direction. After Metamorpho guest in Superman, give him an episode to himself via animation. But I guess doing sensible things is beyond Mr. Zaslav.
Yeah, that is a really good point. Yeah, there should be something like that. I mean, to me, that's more useful than... As much as I enjoyed Creature Commandos, that's more useful than, like, Creature Commandos, you know. But, yeah. Ange writes in, yes, there is some understated but present fan service and double entendres here. How did I'm going to take her from behind not get dissected by the host for the wink-wink nature of it? Definitely the best line in the show. Wait, is Shag possessing me to write this like Dead Man?
Oh, wow.
Probably so. As for the why didn't they use this tech for bigger plots, you have to remember this is Sonar's tech, not the Society. I think Sonar is basically a sleaze. He doesn't want to use this tech for big plots. He wants to use it so he can see beautiful women in some state of undress fighting each other. It isn't even about the money. It's about the spectacle and his kink. Ooh.
Okay, I feel icky now.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. I mean, he did seem, he did seem real into it. So I don't think he's wrong, but yeah, I don't want to think about that too much.
No. Tim Price writes in, "This episode is a winner. I guess I don't overthink the scantily clad women fighting part, because isn't that in most episodes? It's not like the heroes were forced to change into other clothes. They're wearing their regular costume that they fight villains in all the time. Sometimes women villains. Yes, the difference is that this is being marketed for entertainment to a crowd. And is that a reflection of us as viewers of the cartoon or readers of the comics and trying to make us question the standards in superhero stories? Or is it WWE and same question? I mean, I never watched WWE, but I still know the name Ronda Rousey." Okay, enough. Moving on.
Yeah, good point. I mean, yeah, I really don't think that this was, you know, yeah, I mean, be honest with you, I didn't think of this episode as being overly kinky to begin with till it was kind of brought up that it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, you know, these are the characters, this is what they look like. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel like the kink factor was way up in the original episode with the Meta Brawl when Black Canary and Green Arrow first interact and she takes her jacket off and you get the bounce.
Yeah.
That they animate. They literally animate her breasts bouncing when she takes them off.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like that was more gratuitous than anything in this episode.
Yeah.
I feel like, yeah. Not that I'm complaining, but it was, you know, it's just like...
What you draw up for?
I thought you were going to hit me. Captain Inchby writes in, "Great ep about a great ep, Natch. I think you nailed the explanation for why they didn't do more with the tech. The mind control heroes were only capable of taking rudimentary commands. Be angry, fight her, and any bigger plots would have drawn attention and gotten them busted." Okay, that's good enough. That's a good enough no prize. So
Yeah. Far From Home with Dr. Ange. Hal writes in, "It sounds like you've never watched any of those Hallmark Christmas movies where the heroine often finds true love in just a matter of days or even hours. Unbelievable, perhaps, but a well-done trope."
Yeah, we're not big on those.
No.
We don't have the Hallmark Channel, for one.
Yeah.
And, you know, I honestly, when I see that in a movie or something, I'm just kind of like, okay, whatever. I mean, if they just, you know, if you're watching something and that people just attract each other and just decide, okay, let's have sex, you know, that's one thing. But it's like when they, like, literally, like, "I'm going to drop everything I'm doing and fall madly in love with you, and we're going to spend our lives together even though we just met."
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a little much. But, again.
Well, I'm also the person that I think I might be the only female that doesn't like Pride and Prejudice because I don't have the patience for that bull crap.
That's true. Yeah.
Because I'm like, if you had just told him what you thought, this whole story would have been done in, like, 25 pages.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry. I just don't have patience for that bull crap. If I like you, I like you. And if I don't, I don't.
Yeah. Chris Smart writes in, "Fun show. Cindy is right."
Yes! Okay, this is already my favorite comment of the whole thing.
The whole series.
Yeah, exactly.
Cindy is right. Green Arrow is kind of creepy in this episode. "Stop pimping out the young girl, my man. The romance did seem accelerated, but what can you do in 22 minutes? I feel like the episode was for longtime fans who knew the character's history. I enjoyed the episode even though I'm not a Legion or Brainiac fan." Yeah, I mean, this was definitely, yeah. In the comics, they were a couple, so now they're a couple in this episode.
Yeah. I know. I don't.
Yeah.
But still. Ryan Daly writes in, "Reese and I just started watching the Dr. Destiny episodes from season 2, so I'll comment on this episode when we get to it next year."
There's going to be all these comments from Ryan
that
we never read because he's like left them. And that's fine. I mean, if people want to do that, I will go through and just like, I wonder if anybody ever left any comments, and I'll look. And then, you know, when I'm bored, you know, and if there's a mystery, and I have found comments like that from people who have left them years later. So on shows we've done. So that's fine. You know, if you guys want to do that, that's fine. It'll give me something to poke around and look at every once in a while.
Yeah.
Tim Price writes in, "Another slight comic connection would be that the Fatal Five's first appearance included the death of a Legionnaire, Pharaoh Lad, cementing the threat that Supergirl or somebody could die in this story. It was even a Legion reject, Mentala, who joined the Fatal Five in an attempt to infiltrate them to prove her worth, and when she tried, the Empress killed her outright. They truly earned the fatal part of their name." Oh, that's a good point on both of those. I remember that Mentala chick. She was all dressed in yellow and green, and she had a pretty cool Steve Lytle drawn Who's Who entry. But yeah, that's a good point about Pharaoh Lad. I knew that. I knew the story of Pharaoh Lad, read that one, but I didn't pop up in my brain.
Chris Ferroni writes in, "Thanks, Chris, Cindy, and Dr. Ange for another great episode. I wanted to point out that in the past, you've taken Green Lantern to task for using Kara's real name in public, but she calls Green Lantern by his real name in this episode. I guess it's somewhat public knowledge. Bouncing Boy does blurt it out when they first meet, so maybe there isn't too much for concern. Perhaps Kara using his real name was a small device the writers used to show that she has graduated from the teacher-student relationship with him and is now a true colleague, as he alludes to earlier in the episode.
Yeah, that's good point. Yeah, and I think, John, you know, we kind of point, I think I mentioned that in the feedback. It seems like people, at least in John's neighborhood, all know that he's Green Lantern.
Yeah.
We saw that early, like in Blackest Night, when the Manhunters come and got him. So, yeah, that's a good point. You know, maybe not everybody knows that John Stewart's Green Lantern, so, yeah. Doug Adamson writes in, I love this JLU episode on first airing. At the time, I didn't think too much about the whole Supergirl falling for Brainiac 5 too fast angle, perhaps because in the books they had been an item well until 1985. Yeah. But I have seen how some people just click within a couple of hours of meeting and then have that blossom over time into a true romance. So maybe it wasn't that all that bad. That being said, Cupid Green Arrow did seem a bit creepy. But perhaps, and giving Ollie a bit of an excuse here, as he is a known playboy at one point, he knew Kara needed to let down her hair, and by encouraging her, he was giving her permission to have fun. After all, in the present day, she might not feel comfortable dating, but in the future, she isn't Clark's cousin, etc. She's free to be herself, and that includes dating. Well, maybe true, and maybe he feels like, you know, she's stuck there on the farm with the Kents and, you know, let her get out and get wild. But it's still a little, it's still where she just turned 21 and he's significantly older. It still
gives me the ick.
Yeah, come crop is a little creepy, yeah.
Our next episode is Ancient History with Captain Entropy. Rob McCarthy writes in, maybe a gentleman ghost is not a ghost. A, they knock him out. B, wouldn't Green Lantern just suck him into the ring like Ghostbusters?
Maybe, but then, you know, somebody would probably come shut down the central power battery on Oa, and then you'd have the whole, you know, like some bureaucrat, you know, but anyway, yeah, I don't know. Tim Price writes in, yes, Craddock is a ghost, so how does he do any of the things he does? Because he can. So how does Green Lantern knock him out? Because he can. Or less esoteric, he has ghost arms and ghost legs, so GL shook his ghost brain and gave GG a ghost concussion. He better not ghost sleep or I'll have ghost complications. Yeah, we question, wait a minute, how did he knock him out if he's a ghost?
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. For the reincarnation, remember the most important rule. They must look alike. Even though genetics make that nigh impossible, it's central, it's the central requirement. Lucky for the human Carter that he looks just like a long-gone Thanagarian, because sure.
You know, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Good point.
Rob Kelly writes in, it really frosts my nth metal when Batman Bogart's a villain from another hero. Come on, Bruce. Don't you have enough of a rogues gallery? I've always loved the Hawks, and while it's a different version on display in the cartoon, happy to see them get a spotlight. Same thing can be said for Captain Entropy.
Well, yeah, that's true. Batman, why did... I think just we decided Len Wein wanted to write the Gentleman Ghost, and he was writing Batman, not Hawkman at the time, so that's why he used the Gentleman Ghost. So... If we keep saying his name, he's going to show up.
Uh-huh.
You know,
kind of like Candyman.
Yeah, that's right. Gothos Mansion writes in, I first discovered Gentleman Ghost on Super Friends, but Batman 310 made me a fan. I still love that issue in the cover. Heck, I love the entire Wein Novik run. Look at it like this. Hawkman didn't have a comic at the time, plus Gentleman Ghost was kind of a gateway drug. Batman made me a Gentleman Ghost fan, so the first Hawkman back issues I bought were ones featuring the Gentleman Ghost. See? Led me to getting some Hawkman comics. So see, yeah, it worked out. It worked out for Hawkman. You know, you let his villain, let your villain appear in Batman's comic, and they'll come back with him to your comic. So it's nice.
Hal writes in, I really haven't posted a lot lately. I'm not sure how much I can add to what you all have already said. I never really paid attention to the credits growing up. I was always more of a story than an art man. But your discussion with John's refusal to accept reality reminded me of Alan Moore's Twilight of the Gods. At least part of what caused the dystopia in that series was when Epiphany felt slighted after John Constantine refused to give her a light for her cigarette. She felt disrespected and vowed revenge. Hoping to mitigate his part in the past, an aging Constantine time travels and tells his younger self to befriend her. The younger Constantine refuses to give her a light when she arrives, because nobody tells him what to do, not even him.
That does sound like John Stewart in this, you know, I will not be Destiny's puppet. You know, even though I met our son, I'm not going to be with you. I'm staying with Mari. You know, it's like, dude, you know?
Yeah,
I think that, that Twilight, Alan Moore Twilight's the one that was never published. But he had, that's one part, I never knew about that part. The only part I knew was, like, he had, like, Captain Marvel and Mary Marvel being incestuous, which is like,
ew.
I know, yeah, yeah. And that's probably why DC never published it, so, yeah. Brett Young, of course, from the Fantastic Four, writes in, great show, Cindy, Chris, and Cap. I've always been a Gentleman Ghost fan. First, he clearly has manners. It's in the name. Second, a top hat and monocle always works for a smug villain.
See, yes.
The, see the Penguin. Throw in a cane and cloak and you've got yourself a cool-ass bad guy. It's like if Scrooge died at a younger age and became an evil ghost who didn't change his ways.
Oh, there you go.
There's a reason this guy makes the rounds in DC animation. I hope he's part of James Gunn's DCU. I will just jump up and down if Gentleman Ghost is in the DC Universe movies. That would be wonderful. Yes.
Ward Hill Terry writes in, reincarnation across time? Okay. Reincarnation across space 433 light years? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. I can kind of see that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so now we are on to our part one of our two-part series finale, Alive, with our special guest, Tim Price. Isamu writes in, this is the last chance for Auntie Cindy to voice Tala. I don't see any reason why Tala cannot show up in future installments of The House of Frankenstein, which, of course, inspired us to have her show up on The House of Frankenstein.
Yep.
You, like, basically, just, we owe you, Isamu, or, you know, you can either thank Isamu for that plot line that we had with Tala this year, or you can, like, gee, thanks, Isamu, we had to sit through all that. But you got to see, hear Cindy do the voice over and over. So.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. he continues, Grotta survived death in the comics at least twice. The first time was actually a means to escape his prison cell in Gorilla City. In the Flash number 115, Grodd created a pill that would kill his body and transfer his mind into another living being on Earth, which ended up being a human named William Dawson, who fought the Flash in that issue. Grodd's mental powers later changed Dawson's body into a gorilla who resembled Grodd in the Flash number 127. Wow, so Gorilla Grodd, I don't think I knew that. Gorilla Grodd is not in his original body. He's in a human mutated into a... an ape.
So what was the point of going into the human body if it was going to mutate into an ape anyway?
Well, so he could get out of the cell.
Oh,
so he'd get out of Gorilla City cell. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That reminds me of the whole, like, Igor, like, the monsters, the original monster, Frankenstein's brain is no longer in the monster from the Ghost of Frankenstein on. It's Igor. You know,
yeah.
It's Igor's brain. He continues, the second time was in the 1978 Flash Spectacular where he was executed by Solovar in a disintegration chair in a scene that was adapted in a Challenge of the Super Friends episode. But Uncle Paul will eventually get into that story for DC Special Cast. Yes, he will. And that, you're right. The fact that Grodd was in the electric chair on Challenge of the Super Friends is nuts.
Yeah.
But he was. That's the whole Gorilla City episode. Yeah.
Rob McCarthy writes in, is it my imagination or is the art way better than usual? Two, yeah, at one point when he had Brainiac, he slapped around the question pretty good. Either leftover Brainiac or Lex gives himself super strength all the time. His main foe is Superman. He understands punching.
Hmm.
Three, early 2000 writers liked having Luthor save the day.
Yeah, yeah, we know. And I'm really hope James Gunn doesn't go down that road too much. I'll be honest. I liked Nicholas Holt as Lex. I want to see him again. I'm not really keen on having... I hope Superman doesn't get nerfed to make Lex look good in Man of Tomorrow, because I really don't care about making Lex Luthor look good. Let's have our bad guys be bad guys, you know? Let's not try to... Because some people are just bad, you know? It's like, they can have depth, but let's not... We don't need to make them into heroes, you know? That's my opinion, but... Yeah, but anyway. Yeah, the animation in this one, yeah, probably was a little better than usual because they knew they were, you know, getting toward the end.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Michael Kramer writes in, thoughts on Lex's cosmic knowledge. His fusion with Brainiac left Lex with a greater than 12th level intellect. Additionally, Brainiac has traveled extensively throughout the cosmos. Presumably, this was a facet of his mind that was left with Lex. Okay, I'll buy that. You know, that's as good a no prize as any. So.
Okay. Noah Tarno writes in, I like to think that this was indeed the death of Grodd and all of the other Legion of Doom members who we don't see at the very end. It's a series finale, after all, and the denouement of the extended animated universe. So why not add the dramatic finality of a whole bunch of characters kicking the bucket? Besides, they aren't too many images cooler than a ranting gorilla being sucked out of a spaceship airlock. Let's treat it with the appropriate seriousness.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, you know, like, I know that was a big thing in, like, Stranger Things. It's like, are you going to kill anybody? You know, that type thing in their finale. And
I still say Murray should have died.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, he should have.
Well, some people might not have watched it yet.
Dude, you've had a month. If you haven't watched it, it's your problem.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you about that one, though. So for our series finale, Destroyer. We got some comments, of course. Michael Kramer writes in, the minute old man turned into the red dragon, I immediately knew it was Jean.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of the shape-shifting, although that's a helpful clue, but because in the original Justice League series, when you see the computer-generated forms, Jean turns into a dragon. That's a good point.
Yes,
that's a very good point. Yeah.
Very foreshadowing there.
Yeah.
David A. Gutierrez writes in, yes, love the all-star approach to the episode. Wonderful job, all.
Well, thank you, David. That's very nice of you. Brett Young writes in and says, terrific finale, Cindy and Chris. I wasn't watching JL or JLU when they aired, but have since watched them all with my kids. Your love for this series is infectious and really comes through in every episode. Congratulations on giving the League its deserved care and respect. Of course, I do agree with you both that Superman was nerfed a lot in the early episodes, but he had his moments and some of my favorites, the Doomsday Sanction and the final episode. And we asked for people to give us their favorite episodes, and honestly, most people didn't, which was a little disappointing, I'm not going to lie. I was kind of hoping everybody would.
But Brett did,
so yeah. So Brett's favorite episodes are, number one, Destroyer, two, Question Authority, three, Double Date, four, Far From Home, and five, The Doomsday Sanction. Good list. I wouldn't argue with anybody's favorites anyway, but you can't really argue with those. Favorite characters, number one, Superman, two, Green Arrow, three, The Huntress, four, Black Canary, and five, The Question. Again, very solid list. They all had great showings on this series. He says, wraps up, thanks again for letting me be a small part of this episode. You know I love closing out a show. Yes, you do. We know that. And thank you so much for as well as all the FW All-Stars for helping us narrate the action in this episode.
Paul Keehan writes in, Chris and Cindy, congratulations on a great episode to end a fantastic show. I was honored to be a small part of it. You guys really should be proud of all the work and joy you have put into this podcast. It shows. While I'm not sure I can rank my five favorites, I will definitely say that my favorite episodes were Double Date and This Little Piggy. In terms of characters, the amazing thing about this show was that so many of them had growth in their story arc. My favorite arc was for Wonder Woman. Congrats again, and looking forward to the House of Frankenstein.
Well, thank you, Paul. And yeah, I can't argue with Double Date or Little Piggy either. And yeah, Wonder Woman did have a great arc across this series as well. So, Ryan Daly writes in, of course, my co-host on my cohort on Batman Nightcast. He does all the producing. I just show up and talk.
Like what I do.
Yeah, what you do, yeah. Great job, Cindy and Chris.
I know, I like that you're just in parentheses. Yeah, it's just like you're my sidekick.
Yeah, I'm your wing.
Yeah, there you go.
An achievement to wrap up the Justice League animated series. I know you've got more episodes coming. This is a terrific run that you should both be proud of. We didn't have that many episodes coming, so I'm glad you said that. And more importantly, with this off Chris's schedule, we can do Nightcast every day now. Well, we're doing it once a month, so, you know, that's good.
Tim Price writes in, wonderful episode, and the all-star synopsis was just a joy to hear. Simply a great way to kick off the show. I think my high points in Destroyer include Diana flying a tank through the spaceship, Superman's cardboard speech, Lex running away, Steel cosplaying Cap, Diana hugging Jean and Jean hugging her back, Jean calling his sweetheart, and the JLI and JL Detroit homages. Now, about the 12th level intellect thing, I don't necessarily believe Lex has that or higher, but it doesn't matter because he has a 37th level ego. There you go. I've seen too many grown men my age cheer at football games the same way that Atomic Skull shouted, yeah! Of course, I wouldn't do that. I saved that cheer for Avengers Endgame with Cap lifting Mjolnir. You have to have priorities. Christopher, when we went to see Avengers Endgame, I kid you all not, he literally jumped out of his seat, yes, threw his fist up in the air. I mean, went through the whole theater. Everybody in that theater could have heard him.
Yeah, I didn't care. We had a great crowd. I know you're not supposed to do that in theater. We had a great crowd. It was like being in a concert. Everybody was into it. Everybody was reacting the way they should. Nobody was talking over anything. But yes, I did jump out of my seat when Cap caught Mjolnir, that you saw that he'd thrown it and caught it back. And I jumped up and said, yeah, like that, and pumped my
fist. Very much louder.
Yeah, but much louder. And it was, and I do not regret it. And Andrew was dating a girl, and they sat away from us at that time. And he was like, yeah, that's my dad.
He also continues, okay, I wouldn't call these my top five because I can't choose between most of them, but can give five favorites if that's close enough.
Sure.
Justice League, Brave and the Bold, Parts 1 and 2, Eclipse Part 2, A Better World Part 2, and Comfort and Joy. From JLU, Flash and Substance, Greatest Story Never Told, Task Force X, Double Date, and Epilogue. Thank you for letting me be part of your podcast in my own little way. It's been so much fun to revisit this series, and looking forward to the wrap parties. I'll bring the Oreos.
Well, where are they at? Come on, Tim. I'm hungry. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you, Tim. That was great. It was great to have you on the show. Thank you for helping us wrap it up, too, in the first part of the finale. Ward Hill Terry writes in, the FW All-Stars were great. Older Danny is not as emphatic as younger Danny, so I think I will sue Mommy and Daddy. We'll be calling Morgan and Morgan for the people. No, just kidding. Nelson and Murdoch? I don't know.
Chuck Coletta writes in, congratulations on the excellent podcast series. Your discussions are always delightful and insightful. I hope you'll carry on in the future with Justice League action. It's aimed more at kids, but there are some truly fun episodes in that run. When all said and done, I think Batman Brave and the Bold may be my favorite animated DC series. Its deep cuts into Silver Age DC Comics lore were inspired, and the varied of guest characters made me smile each episode.
Yeah, you know, at one time, Cindy and I thought about doing Batman Brave and the Bold.
Yeah.
We really did after this. And we did a couple episodes with Shag on the Justice Society Presents feed.
Yeah.
And we kind of realized that, I don't know why, maybe somewhere down the line we'll reconsider, but we just didn't have that same feeling of, we enjoy the heck out of it, but we just don't have that much to say about it other than we enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. I don't know how to explain it. It just did not feel like a good fit for us to do as a podcast next. You know, maybe the timing's wrong, you know.
Maybe I don't know.
We hadn't done, I just don't really want to do another indexing series either.
No. I mean, we're talking about what we're going to do and how much I'll be involved and everything else, because I've got some other things going on my plate that'll probably take me away from this, but, you know, yeah. Chris will be out and about for sure.
Yeah, and we'll get to that at the end. Justice League Action, I need to give that another shot. Even though it's got, like, Kevin Conroy, Mark Hamill in it, I can't say I've ever really enjoyed it that much. I hate to be that way. I think part of it was I could never watch it when it was, like, on, because Cartoon Network did that maddening thing where they didn't, like, actually show it. They just, like, I don't know, it was like they were releasing the episodes online and just, you couldn't find them. Now I think they're all available. Probably.
I think we need to give it another watch just to see, because I don't think I've ever seen a full episode.
See, I watched a few, and I don't know if it's the animation style or just the fact that it is more, I don't know, everything, you know, I don't mind there being humor. Brave and the Bold had quite a bit of humor and, you know, had that kind of campy Batman 66 kind of angle to it,
yeah.
So I accepted that, but it's like, I don't know, that's like, it's Justice League Action is almost like one step away from Teen Titans Go, which is fine. If you like Teen Titans Go, it's fine, but I don't know. I just, that's not something, it just never clicked for me. I don't mean to, if you like it, I am not throwing off on your liking it or at all. I need to give it another shot and see if I like it, you know, and try to be more fair to it. But, you know, no plans on covering that for sure. So,
at least at this point.
Well, Justice League Action, probably not. You know, Brave and the Bold, maybe someday, but I don't know. I doubt it. I'm sure somebody else will do a Brave and the Bold show between now and then. And more power to you. Don't wait on us to do it. You know, not that you have to anyway. You don't have to have our permission to do it. But, you know, you have our blessing if you want to start one. If one of our listeners wants to start a Brave and the Bold show, I'll be glad to listen and guest. But I just don't want to do it.
Fair enough.
And finally, Doug Adamson writes in, late to the party, but thank you for the fantastic episode. The coverage from JLU Cast has been brilliant from start to finish, and what a finish. I know you said you have a few more episodes up your sleeves, and I'm really looking forward to those. Thank you for all the work this series has put in. When you finally close the door, it will leave a huge gap in my podcast listening. Well, sorry, Doug. This is the only episode. I think we oversold what we were going to do. I really did think we were going to, that was going through. You know, I'm sorry, guys. I really thought we, you know, I had things lined up for another episode. It just fell through. So I did the best I could to make it happen. It just didn't happen. You know, things like that happen sometimes. It's unfortunate that it was for our, you know, at least our pre-finale. But, you know, stuff happens, but at least we did do this episode. So thank you again for everybody that wrote in, left feedback on this episode, on this season, and all the previous seasons. And I think we've, you know, over the years, we didn't read our feedback, you know, every episode, like some shows do. And I think maybe that we might have got more feedback if we'd done that. But, you know, I did try to respond to everybody in the comments. So hopefully, you know, I felt like we had a pretty good thing going back and forth. So thanks, everybody. Everybody who wrote in, I really appreciate it.
Dr. Fate.
Dr. Midnight.
Starman.
Johnny Quick.
Wildcat.
Power Girl.
The All-Star Squadron.
Firebrand.
Amazing Man.
Huntress.
Cyclone.
Sandman.
Mr. Terrific.
Stargirl.
Commander Steel.
Power
Seven
Man.
Soldiers of
Liberty.
Infinity Incorporated.
Those are just some of the celebrated and beloved heroes associated with Earth 2 and the Justice Society of America.
These daring mystery men and women banded together in 1940 to form the first super team in comics.
They inspired a decades-long legacy of heroes who would follow in their footsteps, and now they've inspired us to launch a new podcast.
Justice Society Presents, a new anthology on the Fire & Water Podcast Network featuring a variety of theme shows with different hosts celebrating some of their favorite comics and characters associated with the Golden Age of Comics, Earth 2, the JSA, and beyond.
Join the fight for justice and subscribe to Justice Society Presents on the Fire & Water Podcast Network.
So now it's time to rank our all-time greats. Cindy decided not to participate in this because she didn't want to have to go back and think about all the old episodes. And I don't blame her. I have this stuff more memorized in my brain than she does. So we're going to rank my top 10 JLU episodes and my top 10 Justice League stories, which are the two-part episodes, you know, because most of those were two-parters. Uh-huh. Same thing for this. I mean, if it's a multi-parter, then I probably counted it as such from JLU, but all of them except like one or two were, you know, multi-parters in Justice League. So we'll start out with Justice League Unlimited, and I'll go from 10 to 1. And of course, you know, if you're number 10, that's still great that you made the top 10. Mm-hmm. In my personal, of course, this is just my personal opinion. Yours may vary. It probably does. And it probably, you know, as far as rankings on IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes or whatever, whoever ranks it, it probably doesn't match. This is my personal list. So for number 10, I had Destroyer, the series finale. Number 9, Question Authority from season 2. Number 8, The Greatest Story Never Told from season 1, the Booster Gold episode. Number 7, Clash from season 2 with Captain Marvel. Number 6, This Little Piggy from season 1. Number 5, Flash and Substance from this season. Number 4, our family's absolute favorite episode, Kid Stuff.
Yes.
From season 1. And it almost made it higher, but I just couldn't, like, okay, I can't say that that's better than these following episodes. So, number 3, Panic in the Sky from season 2, which was the penultimate episode of the Cadmus saga. Number 2, For the Man Who Has Everything for season 1, the adaptation of the Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons comic, which is somehow better in the animated version because Superman's backstory is much more just his world that he had on Krypton.
His loss
is much more heartbreaking, and because they came up with that awesome reality for Batman where Thomas Wayne beats the hell out of Joe Chill for all eternity. Holy cow. How do you improve on one of the greatest comic stories of all time? But they did. Just shows you what these guys could do. And number 1, Divided We Fall, the season 2 actual finale of the Cadmus saga. I know there's epilogue, But it's the true finale of that storyline from the first two seasons and Flash's greatest moment ever. Yeah. Yeah, so that was JLU. So for top 10 Justice League stories, again, these are, you know, two-parters. There's one-parter in here, some three-parters. For number 10, I had Paradise Lost. That was the Wonder Woman Felix Faust episode on Paradise Island that really surprised me when we rewatched it. I'm like, wow, it was an early episode. Really good. Really good episode. Number 9, The Enemy Below. That was the Aquaman two-parter where gave us the best reason for Aquaman losing his hand.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Number 8, The Terror Beyond, which was the Defenders episode with Cthulhu, the Cthulhu, you know, creature. Number 7 was The Savage Time, the three-part season 1 finale with the time travel and the Blackhawks and Sergeant Rock and Steve Trevor, which was fantastic. Number 6, Hereafter, where Superman apparently dies but goes to the future where Vandal Savage has destroyed the world, and we get that boss scene with Superman and the sun, the little mini sun. Oh, man, I love that. So number 5, Twilight, which we covered with Rich Vogel, who co-wrote that episode, the writer-producer of Justice League. That's fantastic. That's where Superman and Darkseid have their rematch and actually sets up the finale here in Destroyer. Number 4, Starcross, also with Rich Vogel, who wrote it. That is, of course, the episodes, the three-parter finale of Season 2, where we learn that Hot Girl has been a spy the whole time and betrays the Justice League. And wow, you know, great, you know, what a out of left field, but totally works, you know, great, fantastic. And I love the ending of it. Number 3, Comfort and Joy.
I love that episode. I mean, it's like every Christmas I have to watch that.
Oh, yeah, with Cindy's favorite, the Ultra Humanite.
Yes.
You know, and Superman and taking Jean home to the Kents and all that.
Oh, come on. I mean, I bought a mini little aluminum tree. It sits on my desk during Christmas time with the little color changing disc.
Yeah, yeah. I know, yeah.
With Ultra Humanite there, sitting there.
Yeah.
It makes me happy.
Yeah. Number 2, Legends, which was the Justice Guild filling in for the Justice Society. And that one we covered with our dear departed friend, Zoom Yukinori. So I always have a special place in my heart. Always loved that episode anyway.
Yes.
And then I loved it even more because of that. And it was a real tight contest between these two. I had to pick A Better World as number 1.
Okay.
The Justice Lords.
Okay.
Episodes that we covered with Michael Bailey. I just think those are transcendent. That's like the one of the best Mirror Universe episodes ever. And, you know, best, you know, it trumps any version of the Crime Syndicate that's ever been done. And even my beloved Universe of Evil Super Friends episode. you know, it's just so well written and just so well acted. And just the, you know, the when Kevin Conroy is two Batman are, you know, fighting each other and arguing back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just fantastic. So those were my top 10 episodes from each series. So, you know, before we wrap up, I think it'd be a good idea to just talk about what are probably the greatest contributions for both Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. And, you know, I would think, you know, one, I would say Hot Girl, which was a bold choice. They replaced Aquaman with Hot Girl and not Hawkman. So that was, you know, quite the choice. It gave the team another female and it broke up the boys club feel of the early league. And Chiharo's character was influenced more by the Hawk World version than the classic Silver Age version, but she was kind of her own take. That was their own take on the character, really. And they followed Paul Levitt's suggestion, who, of course, was the publisher of DC at the time, to have her be a plant on the team in a traitor, which was ingenious and created the kind of character friction never really seen on a U.S. animated show with a toy line on the shelves.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then the romance between her and Jon Stewart was also daring at the time for an interspecies, interracial couple, and to not pair her with Hawkman.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I like that. And where it went back to one of their earlier lives as well.
Right, right. And then they connected it to the Warhawk character that they had introduced in Batman Beyond already.
Uh-huh.
And that was a great bit, yeah. And of course, you know, the idea of the unlimited Justice League, that's the current Justice League in the comic series right now, written by Mark Waid.
Okay.
And he knows that, you know, this iteration of the team is the ultimate version of the Justice League, you know? So it's like, it's the best way to have endless story potential, endless character interactions. Every other league now seems lesser because of this. So it's like, if it's smaller than this, then it's like you either do like seven, like the original seven, or you go with everybody.
Right.
It seems like, yeah. But I think overall, and this is no surprise to anybody that's listened to the show, but I think overall, their choice of Jon Stewart as Green Lantern is like the greatest contribution of the show.
I mean, Jon Stewart is our son's Green Lantern because of this show.
Right. I mean, they could have picked Hal Jordan or Kyle Rayner or even Guy Gardner for some added tension, but they dug a bit deeper and they picked Jon just to add some diversity to the team, which was needed.
Yes.
And between the writing and Phil Lamar's performance, they made him the Green Lantern for Andrew's generation and, you know, a whole generation of people. And then they added his Marine background, which wasn't really in the comics, I don't think. I think that was an invention of the show.
Oh, okay.
And then they added that to his comic background as well. That gave him a whole new dimension to his character. It made him different than Hal and Guy, and not just in the fact that he was black and they're white. You know, it gave him like a different, I mean, of course, Hal's in the Air Force, but, you know, it gave him a different kind of persona. And there's a reason we're getting a Lantern live-action TV series with Jon in the lead, and it's all because of this show.
Oh, I definitely say it would go all the way back to this.
Yeah, it's, I mean, this choice, and I mean, there's a, you know, they revealed the Mattel playline figures in a, you know, the first wave of them that they're coming out with later this year, because Mattel's getting the toy license back. Bringing it back to, they used to make the Justice League Unlimited figures.
Yeah.
And they showed Superman, Batman up top, and who was beside him?
Green Lantern.
The Jon Stewart Green Lantern. Yeah. So, yeah, I think overall, and I think because, you know, because of that and because Superman and Batman had already had their own series and stuff, in some ways he's kind of the MVP of the whole series altogether in a lot of ways. So, but he's definitely, I think, the greatest contribution and the most lasting contribution that the creators made.
Okay. I can go with that.
In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
We chose wisely when we offered you the ring. Thank you, Jon Stewart.
And that will do it. We want to thank everyone who listened to this episode and any episode of JLU Cast, whether this is your first one, your fourth one, or your 70th one. We really appreciate
it. We definitely do.
We'd like to thank our special guests who help us cover the DCAU here over the years. A huge shout out to Rob Kelly, Zumu Kanori, Russell Burbage, Justice League writer-producer Rich Fogel, Michael Bailey, The Irredeemable Shag, Derek M. Cook, Ryan Daly, Steve Gibbons, Siskoid, Dan Greenfield, Brian Heiler, Ranger Gore Tolton, Dr. Ange, Captain Entropy, JT the Exterminator, Paul Kien, Sean M. Myers, Billy D., Noah Tarnow, and Tim Price. Thank you all for being wonderful and gracious guests along the way.
Most definitely. Special thanks to our Patreon supporters. For information on how you can support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, visit patreon.com/FWPodcast.
Extra special thanks to Jeffrey Owens of the Classic Horrors Club podcast, Matt Ryan, Rocket Dan, Rudy Castillo, and Neil Whitney, who have asked to be named on JLUcast. Could you guys make sure all the lights are turned off in the Watchtower? Thanks. As for Cindy and I, you will be hearing us on upcoming occasional episodes of Justice Society Presents, covering the Mr. and Mrs. Superman feature from Superman Family. I know we've only had one episode of that so far, way back in JS April last year, but we got more plans, so stay tuned. You know, that's a fun little series we can do here and there, and, you know, that'll keep Cindy in the podcasting game a little bit. Because, of course, this fall, we'll return to Supermates and the House of Frankenstein for coverage of classic-themed horror films and corresponding superhero adventures. In the meantime, you can catch me monthly on Batman Nightcast with Ryan Daly, where we usually cover two Batman tales. One of those each month currently is an issue of Mark Waid and Chris Samnee's excellent Batman and Robin Year One series from last year. I'm also a co-host on the Brave and the Bold segments of Siskoid's FW Team-Up Show. Those segments drop every quarter, rotating with Ryan on Marvel 2-in-1, Shag on Marvel Team-Up, and Bass on DC Comics Presents. I also pop up on special shows on the network. But I do have a new solo series in the works. It's too early to say anything, but I hope to launch it in March, so it's only about a month away. Keep your ears and eyes peeled for that one.
And your podcaster catcher ready.
That's right. Will JLUcast ever return? I wouldn't say it's impossible. I mean, Rob just uncancelled Treasury Cast. Ryan resurrected Secret Origins at one point. There are no plans, but it's worth staying subscribed just in case we get a wild hair and decide to talk some more DCAU.
Okay. Sounds good. So thanks again, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you out there. Take care.
Bye.
JLUcast is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises Worldwide and is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. The characters and properties mentioned in the show are copyright their respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders, and no infringement is implied. So please don't sue my mom and dad. Emails can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com. Comments can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for JLUcast and FW Podcast Network. Please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening to JLUcast.
I once thought I could protect the world by myself, but I was wrong. Working together, we saved the planet. And I believe that if we stayed together as a team, we would be a force that could truly work for the ideals of peace and justice.
What? Like a bunch of super friends?
More like a Justice League.